Welcome along to this bite-sized edition of Tax and Lunch. Thanks for joining me. I'm Vincent Licciardi. You're listening to the podcast for tax advisors to high net worth individuals, wealthy family groups, and private clients. I'm really excited that you're joining me for this episode. Don't forget to subscribe and share this podcast with your team so they can also gain the inside perspective. Let's listen in. Number five is mitigating circumstances. So just to set the scene for you, towards the end of an investigation by the board, you'll be given an opportunity to provide broadly two responses. The first response is on whether you have either breached or not breached the code, or there's been some sort of violation. So you have the opportunity to provide a substantive response to the allegations that have been made. Usually these reports by the board are hundreds of pages and will include all of their evidence. And you have the chance to reply to that. The second letter that you will usually provide to the board is on the basis that they've got you and what the penalty should be. And they're two very distinct letters. This is in relation to the second letter. You have the opportunity to put forward your mitigating circumstances. And I just want to raise a couple key points that we see come up. Most accountants, when things go wrong, will say that they put their clients first. So time got away from them, they focus on the business, they focus on their staff. Unfortunately, and this can happen as lawyers as well, accountants effectively saying that they are the plumber with their tap leaking. And so in this case, saying that you put your clients first is not an adequate mitigating circumstance, not going to be acceptable to the board. The real key issue will be what caused you to breach the TASA, and you need to reflect on why there was a breach. And generally, and I've put three key items here that the board will want to see. They want to see the practitioner show insight into their conduct. So really understanding what went wrong and why, and accepting that you might have made some mistakes along the way. To show contrition, that's part of that process in respect of insight. And then lastly, the whole process can be quite cathartic. I've had accountants who have actually said at the end of the investigation that the investigation itself was a very good wake-up call for them. They didn't lose their business. They might have received an education order, but they actually find that it's a good way to reset things in their business as to what their expectations of the board are. A couple additional points in this regard. This can be quite important if you have staff accessing the portal, if you have a circumstance that could be ongoing. Maybe the environment in the business is not good. There might be bullying, there might be harassment, etc. These go to parts of the TASA. What have you put in place to isolate the problem? So can you explain to the board that, for instance, what went wrong? It's now over, it's finished, and it's isolated. Going forward, we're going to do better. What have we put in place to make sure, for instance, I get all my lodgements done on time if I'm a bit of a serial offender with outstanding tax obligations? That can include, for instance, the accountant outsourcing their own tax work, perhaps to a bookkeeper or a different firm in the worst of cases. So just keep in mind, in respect of your mitigating circumstances, you're trying to show to the board in that second letter, I might have got it wrong, but I'd like to do better in the future. And because of, unfortunately, the blunt instruments that are available to the board, you really want to aim for, it's rarely ever going to be a no further action where the board just walks away. You really want to aim for an education order and an official warning, because anything more than that is going to affect the business. Alyssa, I'll pass to you. Thank you.
Sure. So tip four is all about documents. So TPB investigations are paper warfare. So it's crucial that you have good record keeping and lots of documents to support your narrative. So have you documented the following: staff and client onboarding process, letter of engagements, work papers, supervision and oversight. So the TPB also considers whether the business as a whole has adequate measures and safeguards to see, you know, there's enough overview and supervision of the tax lodgements and the client work being conducted. Further, the TPB will also consider, you know, does the business have moving forward adequate measures to ensure that such breaches don't occur again? So there's also documenting CPD logs and conflict registers as well. So do you have the correct conflict letter issued out to your clients to mitigate any conflict of interest, if that's relevant? So TPB investigations are essentially a back and forth of letters and responses. Yes, sometimes the cases can go in excess of 500 pages, and the TPB will also ask for numerous documents. And sometimes I think we've had this instance where the TPB might be investigating a certain complaint, but they will also ask for other documents not really related to this complaint, but for example, you know, onboarding processes, et cetera, just to double check that as well. So it's crucial that you have a lot of documents and that you have it all in order as well.
Great, thanks, Alyssa. And just to add to that, one thing that we've seen come up quite a bit, and I think it's just the nature of the times, especially in the last few years, are the conflicts and conflicts of interest that accountants are facing. For instance, you might act for a business, could be mum and dad, could be siblings, and there's a breakdown in the family relationship and the accountant's stuck in the middle. Who do you then act for? Do you continue to follow the instructions of the person that remains your client? What about the person who's gone to another business, another accounting firm, who was previously your client? These can actually lead to then complaints, and usually they do. And so it's absolutely crucial, as Alyssa says, try as best as you can to have great record keeping. And I know we say that often to the clients themselves with the ATO, but applies equally in your practice. A couple points, and some of these I would have thought perhaps go without saying, but unfortunately we see cases, and even within the Administrative Appeals Tribunal, what I generally refer to as aggravating features. These are generally behavioural points that accountants engage in, thinking that perhaps it's a good idea, I'm not sure, but they tend to be behavioural points, things that go wrong, that only add to the penalty that the accountant will receive. They rarely, if ever, are going to actually help the accountant and apply as a mitigating circumstance. Some of that includes unprofessional conduct towards the TPB, AAT and ATO. That can include delay. So if you recall the earlier question by the board, which said you have to respond by a certain date, and if you don't respond on time, it can go towards whether you're fit and proper under the code. False declarations, ticking the box that we've already touched on. Misleading behaviour or impropriety towards the board. This can include, for instance, there have been cases where accountants have then tried to interfere with the board's ability to obtain witness statements, where accountants have gone out trying to influence the evidence that witnesses might provide, bearing in mind that the board will try and verify the statements that you make, including with previous clients, their new accountants, for instance. So absolutely crucial. I've often said to accountants who may wish to talk to an ex-client who's made a complaint, be very, very careful. And I would recommend against it. Certainly don't do it, because it could be taken absolutely the wrong way. And I've just stopped for a second. We had a question in the Q&A. We'll be circulating a recording of this as well. Thank you. Another aggravating feature, we've seen ATO funds redirected, false amendments, false tax returns lodged, BASs, other statements with the ATO that are just completely wrong. And the last one is a pattern of behaviour. This relates to, you might have even seen published about lodging superannuation fund tax returns with the ATO, stating that the funds have been audited by a certain person, certain fund auditor, and that's occurred 30, 40, 50 times. The TPB and ATO contact the auditor and they don't even know about the funds that supposedly have been audited by them. So patterns of behaviour are particularly problematic for accountants. We're nearly towards the end. We're starting to push for time. Just a couple points on this, and this you can certainly take with a grain of salt, but we mean it with good reason. Don't go a TPB investigation alone, because what I've often seen is accountants replying off the cuff, accountants replying late, they get emotional. All of that is understandable, but you need a buffer between the investigating officer and your business. A couple reasons, really, to remove the emotion out of the entire process, because it can be taken quite personally, but also to bear in mind that you still have a business to run. So in our circumstances, most of the time, we're taking a lot of pressure off the accountants. So the extent of our pressure is generally asking for a lot of documents. And some accountants might get a bit annoyed with that, but then we help make the case before the TPB and really understanding and picking apart their questions to make certain that we respond to those questions accurately. And sometimes they can be loaded questions as well to inadvertently or possibly intentionally trip the accountant up. And great, someone just responded in the chat, perhaps in response, I think, to the query that I had or point that I'd made about the fund, that the ATO actually sends the auditors a listing of the fund that they supposedly have approved and then have been lodged. And sometimes absolutely, and the date on which the fund was audited. And that can be the basis for perhaps the auditor uncovering there's a whole heap of funds that supposedly they audited that they hadn't. And you might recall, it must be around 12 months ago, or so, where the ATO and TPB were speaking about the misuse of the SAN numbers, the auditor numbers. So thanks for that comment as well. And just the last response from us, you, and last slide, we've already touched on this a couple of times. The absolute key in all TPB engagements is to act very fast. There is very little time provided by the TPB, usually to respond to very extensive questionnaires. And so I've had cases where even the initial letter rolls in, and so it's before an investigation has started, there might be a dozen questions, less than 14 days are provided by the time the accountant gets to have a look at it. Then they might ask for an extension from the board, and then they'll ask for another one. And it's only the third time after they've collated the information they might get us involved. And so absolutely have to meet those deadlines and work very, very fast to be able to respond to them. A couple of takeaway points, and then we're most happy to open up to questions. Alyssa, could you take us through, please, those takeaway items? Thank you.
Sure. So as discussed, the crucial points we discussed was the document process, having the correct documentations and records of those as well. Acting quickly, as Vincent said, delays are an aggravating feature, so it is important to act fast. And making sure that your tax affairs are up to date, including all registrations and reporting to the TPB. It's definitely a daunting process when you receive a letter from the TPB, but there's an art to responding. So we think it's important not to go at it alone. And, you know, please reach out if you need any assistance on that front.
Great. Thank you, Alyssa. So we're happy to open up to the group if you have any questions for us about our experiences acting for, we only act for accountants with the TPB. So it'd be great if you have any questions, most happy to answer those. Oh, that's a very interesting question that's been put forward. But perhaps the best that I can do with that, the question for the group is what are our views in relation to particular sanctions against a large accounting firm that probably hit the news in the last few days? Probably can't say all too much about that, apart from saying that the outcome in that case is at least in part the result of the limited powers that the board have. And you might recall that I mentioned earlier that there's some blunt instruments here in what the board can actually do, in what they're empowered by Parliament to do. And I think what some people might say was lenient in respect of that case is probably in relation to the limited powers that the board have. So great question. Thank you. I wish I could answer a bit more fulsomely for you. Any other questions? Happy to keep that chat box open. Oh, great question. How many reviews assisted with? More than I can care to count. And I've only had one to date where the accountant was, the registration of the accountant was terminated, but the business was maintained. So that was a case where the accountant ran his business through a company structure. And so what we were able to do in conjunction with the TPB was to effectively negotiate an outcome where a new registered tax practitioner was appointed to the business, to the trading company that ran the accountancy practice. The accountant who was our client was permitted to remain in the business and keep working, but he was not allowed to continue operating as the actual tax agent. So touch wood, only one and hopefully no more. Thank you. This is a great question. How do you, as a tax agent, confirm whether the client has provided true and correct source documents? Fantastic question. This is probably, and happy, Alyssa, for you to jump in on this. This is probably the toughest question that accountants face every day of the week. And also, too, as lawyers, we face similar problems. How do you know what your client has said is actually truthful, is actually reflective of maybe their claims, whether it's motor vehicles or capital gains? That's a very difficult one. Usually, and perhaps we can talk as lawyers, it's about exercising your judgment to verify what they've said. So sometimes that will be about saying, look, that story that you've told us doesn't really make sense. Have you got an email or a text message or a contract to support that, a receipt? Because otherwise, if we explain this to the board or the ATO, they're probably not going to accept it. And they might go off and try and verify it themselves. Alyssa, do you have anything to add to that?
I think it's just, as you said, exercising your judgment. And, you know, if you have a gut feel of something not being right, tactfully asking the question back to the client, or I think those are just kind of how we can manage whether the client has been providing true documents on that front. Yeah,
I completely agree. So great question. It's probably the hardest thing that accountants will have to deal with on a day-to-day basis. We never say you don't need to audit your client's tax returns. You're not auditors, that you have to make certain quite literally to the dollar it's accurate. But there is an element there of professional judgment as well. Now, I'm just going to click here to the Q&A. A couple great questions coming through. So we'll try and get to as many of these as we can. Procedures and checklists. Do you see there's lenience around documentation for sole practitioners versus larger firms? Unfortunately, I probably see it the opposite way. Because the board really, the way they exercise their discretion is quite black and white. That's my sense of and my experience in the various investigations. And so certainly, even if you are a sole practitioner, I would absolutely recommend do your level best with work papers, source material. And what can often happen is some of this is also risk management. If, for instance, your client comes to you and they've had a whopper of a capital gain for the year, or there's something that sticks out compared to the norm, then it's quite natural you might focus on that particular event or transaction a bit more relative to everything else. And so I wish I could give you a better answer than necessarily professional judgment, but much of it is risk management as well from your perspective. Are you comfortable with what is being lodged? And then also to not just on the day, which I think to the questioner's point about documentation, not just what you lodge on the day, but what if you had to reflect on that in a year's time? If you were asked the question, how did you know that that was right at the time? You might have had a great file note, you might not. So record keeping in that regard is important. But to answer the specific question, unfortunately, I don't see leniency for smaller practitioners. A question here, but as accountants, aren't we not auditing the information? In simple terms, I agree. You're not auditors of the client to then lodge the material with the ATO. But you are not also to, sometimes we call it the letterbox. As lawyers, we have some clients that just want us to act as a go-between. They tell the lawyer what they want us to say. That's not going to fly as a professional. So it will usually be, it will usually not be, I should say, a defense or an explanation to simply say, oh, that's what the client told me, so that's what I told the ATO. That's usually not going to be enough if it's something that sticks out.